And on the line, we have Alex Bainbridge. Alex is the convener of Socialist Alliance. And so we're going to have him on the line to have a bit, I guess, of a political discussion about some of the political implications of COVID-19 and this sort of whole crisis in the context of what's happening, I guess, in Australian politics. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Jacob.
I guess the kind of first question, I guess, how can you, summarise, the political situation? I guess, what has sort of COVID, maybe the first sort of question we should start with is, what has this sort of COVID-19 kind of crisis revealed, about the nature of the political system we live under, which is capitalism?
Well, I think the first thing you have to say, very clearly, the government has badly mishandled this issue, both in Australia and in several other countries, although it's been uneven around the world. But what you see is the government does not care about us, about ordinary people, the same as it was the case with the bushfires, the same as is the case in general with climate change. The government is very clearly, their number one concern is about looking after the profits of big corporations, and the healthcare of the population is decidedly a secondary or tertiary issue for them.
And I guess what can you give some examples of how, you know, the government has kind of failed in terms of serving the interests of ordinary people?
Well, look, you know, we've known about this issue since the end of last year, and certainly since January and even early February was, you know, the main details have been sort of quite clear. But, you know, the government, you know, doesn't have a plan. They haven't been... you know, there's not enough testing kits, at least that's the impression. There's not enough testing happening in Australia. I mean, compared to South Korea, where they've been testing 20,000 people per day and then following up individual cases to sort of to really make sure that they, one, know the spread of the disease, and two, that the people are getting adequate care. There's nothing remotely like that happening in Australia.
No, it's absolutely ridiculous. Alex, just you mentioned South Korea, that's a country that's been doing quite a good job of following up. Tests are absolutely essential in the fighting off of a pandemic. We need to understand where the transmissions are coming from and how many people actually have the the disease. But here in Australia, I believe I unfortunately have a lot to do with Royal Melbourne Hospital at the moment, where they're doing a lot of testing. If you don't show serious enough symptoms, they're not testing you. So you could be a carrier, you could actually have COVID-19, but they're not testing you. Do you think that there is a political, there's a political element to the lack of tests that we have? I mean, surely we would be able to get those tests if we mobilised. What's the barrier there, and what's the justification for the government to not roll out these tests in such an aggressive manner when we know that this actually helps with regards to stopping transmission?
Look, I don't know the exact technicalities of how many tests we've got and how quickly it is to manufacture them or to get hold of them. But I think the answer to your question basically is that even though our health system in Australia is better than some other countries, it still has been impacted profoundly by neoliberalism, which, you know, really is the dominant policy position of capitalism around the world, and that has basically meant that everything is about looking after the checking the bottom line, the cost cutting measures, the market mechanisms to some extent in the healthcare system as well, and I think that the government has not prepared even what could have been done between January and now. And I mean, I don't know what the situation was with how quickly tests can be manufactured, but I do know that if South Korea can organise 20,000 tests a day, it would have been possible for Australia to do a better job had they prepared properly since January.
Mm. And what about just in regards to closure of schools and universities? I have heard that Scott Morrison personally called the coordinator of all the Catholic schools here in Australia, which is approximately 600 schools, and actually personally intervened to stop the closure of these schools. Can you give us some reasoning about Morrison's reticence to close schools and, you know, places like universities when we see from other parts of the world that schools and universities have played a huge role in transmission of the viruses? Why is there such a reticence to close the schools and universities at this stage?
Well, I think actually the first thing you should notice is that a lot of private schools have been closing, or at least projecting to do so early before Easter, and that's already an indication about one set of standards for the people who can afford to send their kids to private schools compared to the public school system. Look, I think there's several aspects about it. I mean, again, it's hard to speculate or put exact motives into the minds of the government. But I think that what is very clear is that if you close down schools and you close down other sectors of the economy, that's going to have an economic impact. And certainly if schools are closed, that has an implication for parents to be looking after their kids. It's going to have a broader economic impact. And you see from the stimulus package a week or so ago, the government's concern. You can see by the priorities of that stimulus package that the concerns of the government are about looking after big corporations, not looking after the healthcare of the population. So I basically don't trust Morrison when he says that they're following the science and they're doing the best possible things, and that really there's sensible health reasons not to close schools. And because you look at his overall package, is about looking after big corporations. So I mean, I think that's basically what it is. And as soon as they do close down schools, that's going to that raises broader questions about why isn't the government looking after workers that need sick leave? Why isn't the government looking after practical things that people need, like we're going to make sure you're going to not lose your home as a result of this crisis.
Going into that, one of the things about this crisis has been around the question around social distancing. Basically, experts are encouraging that basically everyone stays home if possible and avoids any kind of gatherings, any sort of social activities, although, I mean, some social activities in small numbers, etc. I mean, they're not completely, experts not necessarily saying to put your life on hold completely, but there is a strong push, that people, if they're in a position to, they should stay home and self-isolate themselves for society for the duration and for the purposes, I guess, of flattening the curve, in a sense that one of the issues is that our healthcare system isn't well equipped to take these cases on. So there has to be, the more COVID-19 cases happen in our overcrowded healthcare system, the more that, someone might get refused treatment for another condition that might not necessarily be related to COVID-19. But I guess this whole question around self-isolation, what does that kind of reveal, I guess, about the class inequalities, I guess, in Australia and in the world, especially when you consider that the majority of working class people don't actually have the means to self-isolate themselves?
Yeah, well, I think that you've exactly hit the nail on the head. And if what the experts are saying is correct, and we need to have physical distance and be isolated from social gatherings, then what is needed is people need to have the capacity to be able to do that. What that means is sick leave. It means a guarantee that you're not going to be thrown out of your house because you can't pay a mortgage or you can't pay your rent. It means that people need to either be able to go to the shops or else the government needs to set up some other service so that food can be delivered to people's houses. And it means that people need to have those sort of guaranteed, the confidence and the expectation that when this is resolved, they're going to have a job to return to. Now, all those things are... All those things go against the capitalist logic of individual firms making their own individual decisions based on their own individual profitability. All those things, to implement them properly and thoroughly and systematically, require the government to step in to make an intervention into the market, and then especially if it means things like, rolling out, mass testing, looking at, requisitioning what is needed to deal with the health aspects of this crisis. All those things have implications for the government to step in and take control of various aspects of the economy and put the profits of big corporations second. And this is, again, I've said this a few times, but it is a practical question, and you can look at it in multiple different ways. In practice, what the government is doing is looking after big corporate profits instead of ordinary people. And I think, if social isolation is what is needed, the government needs to mandate that people have got access to sick leave, you know, income while they can't go out and earn an income, guaranteed job when they come back, and protections about their housing. Those things are, you can't say on the one hand we need social isolation on one hand and then not provide those things on the other.
Yeah, it's actually a matter of survival for a lot of people, and a large number of people now, because as I mentioned earlier in the show, these neoliberal policies that have been implemented for decades have whittled away at the sick leave and the entitlement and the workers' conditions. All of these things which would benefit, you know, the community as a whole, which would mean that people would be able to self-isolate. This is a growing problem that we have. We have the fact that, this individualistic idea of neoliberal policy, I mean, you work hard and you make money and you're an individual, etc., versus the needs of the community. We've gotten to this point where our neoliberal individualism is now harming the community as a whole, because we can't come together and we can't work in this situation, because literally for some people, going to work is a matter of survival. And all around the world, we're seeing these, authoritarian responses to people breaking social isolation rules. We have, I think in Italy, they've now charged 40,000 people for going out amidst a lockdown. We can't have these authoritarian punishments without supporting these individuals to actually make decisions that don't mean they starve and that don't mean they get kicked out, of their homes. What sort of things can we as a community, how can we pressure the government to implement these things that stop people from making survival choices and then getting fined for those survival choices because they're breaking the rules, so to speak?
Well, I mean, firstly, on the sort of neoliberalism, I think the best examples that I know about that come from Britain, where the National Health Service is run more as a public service than Australian Medicare system is. And Australian Medicare is still a fee-for-service system, except the government pays a portion of the fee. That's actually a less desirable setup than an actual government-provided health service. But in Britain, they have had because of neoliberalism, they've had big cutbacks on the capacity of the NHS, so that every year in winter, the NHS is overstretched. There's no excess capacity whatsoever in the system because they have cut back so much as a result of neoliberalism. Now, what that means is there is zero excess capacity in the system for when a bigger pandemic like COVID-19 comes along. And then you have the embarrassing situation of the government putting out by tweet, if any company can make ventilators, please, we'd love to buy them. And, this is a sort of an absolutely ridiculous situation where, the government should be able to, as I said before, we've known since January and early February that this is a situation. The British government has provided health service reports in the past about the lack of ventilators, and this is a problem that was knowable, it was foreseen, not only foreseeable, was foreseen, and still they have not taken the necessary steps to deal with it, even though they've known about this disease for several months, and that is 100% a result of neoliberalism. Now, you also were asking about authoritarianism, and I'm speaking to you from Queensland. So in Queensland, we've got a situation where the police are going to be checking people to make sure they're sort of self-isolating, and the penalty is going to be a $13,000 fine if they're not self-isolating. Now, I understand in WA, the situation is even worse, like $50,000. And I mean, it varies from state to state. But here, you've got this situation where police are involved, and there are fines to individuals if you're not self-isolating. But on the other hand, there is not the capacity to go and get a test from your doctor or some other health clinic, like in South Korea, it's literally drive-through testing. You can't actually test for yourself, and there's not the sick leave and the other protections I mentioned earlier that are provided. So it's a way of managing the system, which is basically not about looking after people's needs, but putting in these authoritarian punishments that are, not good for actually solving the problem. All they're good for is managing an unfair system on behalf of the big end of town that that know that people will rebel and resist. Because we're just at the beginning of this in Australia.
Yes.
And you can't imagine that without a serious change of government policy. There's not going to come a time when, on the one hand, when the disease gets worse and people need to take more measures to stop some aspects of social and economic life, but there's not the infrastructure in place to make that possible. It's not a far-fetched scenario to think that people will want to, and in fact will need to, protest about it. And obviously, from our point of view, we need to be thinking about various ways of making protest possible. But I personally am 100% against outlawing protest in this situation. I think it's one thing to close down a big football match or a big concert or something like that. I mean, I think there are cases for some of those measures in a medical emergency, but democratic rights, including the democratic right, not to be fined just because some government doesn't think you're sort of self-isolating enough. I mean, in actual fact, other countries' experience has shown that you don't need a police fine to get people to self-isolate when there is adequate income support, adequate sick leave, adequate protection of your house and livelihood. So those are the things that we need to worry about, not authoritarian measures that basically blame the individual, which again is that gets back to that neoliberalism question. It's all about an individual's responsibility, not the social infrastructure and the social support that can make it possible.
Yeah. Now, on the question around protests and how we can sort of build, I guess, a fight back, I think one of the more interesting things, I mean, especially as a Marxist and a socialist, one of the I think, amazing things, I guess, that this crisis reveals, because we've been sort of, the capitalist media has been trying to tell this kind of myth that, capitalists and the wealth producers are essential to the production and the runnings of society. But I think COVID-19 actually demonstrates that it's actually workers that are essential to the production of society. And when you look at the fact, it is actually healthcare workers. Food workers, and education workers, supermarkets,
stockers.
They're the ones who are actually essential to keeping society running in this period. It's not actually, in fact, in some ways, the government is actually a hindrance to actually ordinary people. And of course, it's actually ordinary people who are, organising themselves to socially isolate at a much greater rate than what the government is acting.
Mm.
And yeah. And I'd like to hear sort of your comments on, what this kind of reveals about the nature of, class relations and how workers are essential to production.
I think the thing about class relations, I mean, the thing I'd say, emphasise again is that, we've learned from Naomi Klein the whole idea about the shock doctrine, and when there is a crisis, the capitalist elite, whether it's corporate or government, step in to try and basically manage the crisis in their own interests, and even potentially to get policies implemented that benefit them, and at the expense of ordinary people. Now that's what we're already seeing with this crisis, as with others. So I think that's in terms of the way the capitalist authorities respond to protect profits and not people. Now, you're right. I think we in the socialist movement have known for a long time that it's workers that run society, not bosses. And the number of workplaces you've been in, you sort of say to people, look, if the boss didn't turn up tomorrow, what would change? Nothing. Things would just tick along as normal. If all of us didn't show up tomorrow, everything would stop. I mean, so we know that. All the things I'm talking about, even if we were to have, if we need isolation and we need a service to distribute food to people's home, we obviously need healthcare workers. We do need a number of services to keep on operating. We need workers to do that. But to make that possible in this kind of a crisis, what we need is mass testing so that people know if they're sick or not, if they need to sort of take measures to prevent transmission to other people. And then, as has happened in some other countries where cases are identified, even when it's larger numbers than what we've seen in Australia. I mean, like, as far as I can tell, there's not very much compared to other countries of literally chasing down all of the individuals that an infected person has been in touch with to basically test them as well and then take whatever public health measures. I mean, that's the basics of public health. I mean, you know, the public health experts know that. But, I mean, well, the starting point of it is the mass testing, which we haven't seen in Australia. It should be free, of course. And you know, everything else builds from that. And that is not the approach the government has taken today.
All right. Well, Alex, I guess we'll kind of wrap it up now. Do you have any kind of final comments you would like to make?
Look, just I would like to say that it is important that we do look after each other in this time. I mean, like, there is going to be, a lot of things come under pressure, but, human solidarity is what can work, both at the small scale in terms of looking after people in your own neighbourhood, but also on the macro scale as well. And we need to push for government policies that point in that direction. We can expect that that we will come out of this. I think, I think what this crisis reveals, and it's a little bit like climate change on a smaller scale, but the crisis reveals that the government's not looking after our interests. It does point to a whole lot of inadequacies in the way the current capitalist system is set up. It points us in the direction of organising society in a better way in general, both to deal with this immediate crisis, but if we take those pointers and look at them more generally, like how can we organise our healthcare system better? How can we organise our, even our distribution of food and, toilet paper and whatever in Woolworths and Coles at the moment, it's done purely for profit. If we had a distribution system that was set up for people, it would be better for ordinary people. So, this crisis points the way towards solutions that will help us in this crisis, but also give us a better society in general. And the only way that's going to happen is if people organise and push for them. Because if we don't, the capitalist government is going to impose their own solutions, which are going to be looking after corporations and more dog-eat-dog survival and, a less good society for the majority.
True words. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, thank you, Alex.
Hope you have a good morning.
You too.